Okay, so the first source is, it's a Jewish Week article. And if you just Google Half Shabbos, it's the first thing that comes up. Okay, that's the best way to come to it. So I'm just going to read a little bit from the article. Maybe we'll stop. It's kind of humorous a little bit. But I'm going to kind of take excerpts from this article. And I'll put together, I don't think the phenomenon of Half Shabbos is like really well understood. It's kind of like a confused area. So I'm going to take specific excerpts in the beginning of this year. Then we'll move on to the Gemara Megillah. Okay? So I'll just start reading in case people aren't holding in Half Shabbos. Okay. So the first is like this. In the middle, basically, this article was written, they went to some Shabbaton, and the kids were texting on Shabbos, right? So the writer of the article says like this. According to interviews with several students and administrators at modern Orthodox day schools, the practice of texting on Shabbos is becoming increasingly prevalent, especially but not exclusively among modern Orthodox teens. Okay, the practice has become so widespread, some say half of modern Orthodox teens text on Shabbos, that it has developed its own nomenclature, keeping half Shabbos, for those who observe all the Shabbos regulations except for texting. Okay, so this is the phenomenon. Now, I don't know if I really believe that half the modern Orthodox teens text on Shabbos. Okay, but so this article, it's kind of dramatic. It's kind of like very melodramatic of how extreme the things, how prevalent it is. But like if it's half the, I'm more interested in focusing not so much on how many kids don't really keep Shabbos, and they also text on Shabbos. I more want to focus on the phenomenon of kids who keep Shabbos and they just text. Okay, that's the question. That kind of phenomenon.
So you think like kids who really think it's okay? They're not just doing it.
No, they know it's not okay. They know it's not okay. They know you're not allowed to text on Shabbos. Derabbanan, Sister Rabbanan, Molid, whatever it is. There's some, nobody holds it's like totally halachically mutter. They know there's something wrong with it a little bit. But they'll keep Shabbos everything else. They'll keep every other halacha, but they'll use their cell phones, right? They'll text. Okay, so that's the phenomenon we're talking about, half Shabbos. That's the real half Shabbos, okay? That it exists, okay? Okay, fine. So now I'm going to skip some parts in the article. It's a funny article, but okay, fine. So now we'll go to Rabbi Berg. Hey, you guys know Rabbi Berg?
From the Saret?
From the Saret. I don't think so. He was the head of NCSY, I think, in the Western...
No, he's the head of...
Of what?
NCSY.
NCSY still is. Oh, he is. Top guy. Okay, good. Rabbi Berg. Okay, fine. Good. So now this is Rabbi Berg. He's quoting Rabbi Berg. I think this is him. Okay. It's almost the problem of addiction, says Rabbi Berg. American teens, according to surveys and anecdotal evidence... Okay, anecdotal evidence here is really good. I checked this out also from my sort of people. I know people who like teach in high school, so I ask them to talk to their classes. So like basically this stuff checks out. The numbers is debatable, but there is this phenomenon. Okay? So according to surveys and anecdotal evidence, communicate with their friends during the week primarily by sending text messages on their cell phones. It's hard to stop for 25 hours, the rabbi says, if they feel everyone else is doing it. In high school, the world revolves around their friends. Everything is about your friends and your social group. Okay? So I think this is where they're kind of going wrong a little bit here, is that it's kind of like saying that, in high school, your whole world revolves around your friends and you're texting your friends. And since everybody else is doing it, all your friends are doing it, you're doing it too. It's almost like a peer pressure kind of argument. So I think that's missing the mark. I think it's tied into the fact that, like, in high school, everything revolves around your friend, things like that. But I don't think it's the idea of peer pressure so much. But we'll see.
Kind of like the chicken and the egg argument, because you have to, in order to have peer pressure, you have to have people who are doing it originally.
Yeah, right. That's also part of it. It's the whole phenomenon can't exist on an individual level.
Yeah.
Like turning on a light, a guy can turn on a light on his own. But the whole phenomenon is like the social network only makes sense if everybody's doing it. Right? So but okay, fine. They have questions of how it originated. Did it originate with non-Orthodox people? Then the Orthodox people kind of turn on the computer after Shabbos and then they realize, oh, I missed everything. It's a little humorous, but okay, fine. We'll leave that aside, the origination of the phenomenon. Okay, now I have Rabbi Perton. Okay, Rabbi Perton says his day school recently tried to enforce a ban on using cell phones during school hours. When we did take away a phone, he said, the amount of pain the student was in was literally unbearable. The parents would beg and scream because they were getting it at home from their kid and just wanted to end their own misery. Okay, that's my favorite quote. Okay, so this is already now, he's seeing something else. It's just like the kids, it's just an intolerable pain to be separated from the cell phone for 25 hours. Okay, what's going on? And they're tying this into the idea of on Shabbos, you're separated from the phone for 25 hours. When they try this little experiment on experimental rats over here, they tried it out on them, and like the kids just couldn't take it. They went crazy. The parents went crazy. The parents are begging the school to let them have their phones back. Okay. And now we'll skip a little bit more. I'm, you know, pulling out what I want to pull out here. Okay, fine. Now we get to Chani, okay? Chani's one of the anecdotal evidences here. Okay. Chani said she is typical. A student at a New York area yeshiva high school, she started texting on Shabbos when she discovered that many of her Orthodox friends were already doing it. I was just so bored on Shabbos, she said. I had nothing to do. Okay, bored. She's bored. Okay, that's her description of the phenomenon.
Just strange, like, people have been bored on Shabbos for decades.
Oh, yeah, I was so bored when I was like, a kid. I was so bored when I was a kid.
You know, to turn to something like that is, you know.
But now you could. I mean, now you could, though. I think it's discreet, though. So, you know, but it's not really, that's the crazy thing. It's not really discreet. You're texting out the whole world.
I guess
it's hidden from, like, you know, the authorities, from your parents, from, like, the teachers. So, like, your world knows, your friends and people in your age level know, but, like, the authority people, the super ego figures who criticize and who tell you not, they don't really know about it. You know, so it's an available thing. But, yeah, when I was a kid, I was really bored in Shabbos. It was brutal. It's terrible. It's tough. Shabbos is hard for a kid, I think, in general. Okay. We have a couple more quotes here, and then we'll try to analyze a little. Okay. If in previous generations the biggest challenge of Shabbos observance was making a living, today is technology, Rabbi Goldmintz wrote in his column to Ramah's parents. These are kids from otherwise Shomer Shabbos homes who nevertheless sneak into the rooms or down the street and use their phones or computers to text or tweet with friends. These are not yet necessarily kids who are so-called off the derech, for they otherwise may not turn on lights or televisions, but they just can't break the social habit. They keep Shabbos, but not all of it. Okay, I love it. It's like to describe these kids like sneaking out of the house to smoke some crack, you know? I love it. Very melodramatic, okay? You can't say that the kids who text on Shabbos are off the derech. No, nobody can say this, says Dr. Michelle Friedman, a psychiatrist who works extensively in the Orthodox community. Texting on Shabbos does not necessarily lead to other violations, she said. This is a separate category. Okay, and the final quote. How they're handling it. Okay, students from local Orthodox high schools say teachers and administrators usually handle this topic in a subtle way, talking about the beauty of Shabbos rather than ordering an outright ban on Shabbos texting. Okay, preaching to teens would be ineffective, says Julia. Okay, more anecdotal evidence. Who attended the Shabbaton where most of the students texted. It's a waste of energy to argue with the kids. Okay, and that's, you know, my summary of the article. Okay, so what's the phenomenon? What the heck is going on here? And I think the problem, the way they're treating it, is a Shabbos issue. And I think most people kind of realize in a sense it's not really a Shabbos issue so much because kids are keeping Shabbos, you know? Now, how they're dealing with it, talking about how important Shabbos is, and that's clearly missing the mark. You know, that's clearly off the what's going on here. And I think there's a certain sense in the article of something's going on here. With these texting and the cell phones, you know, something's going on, and they're calling it an addiction. But I just kind of want to see if we can define a little better what's the phenomenon here that's happening. And I think that I can't imagine it's 50%. It's ridiculous. I don't think it's true. But even if it's 5-10%, you know, just the fact that there's a phenomenon by analyzing the addicts, the extreme form of this phenomenon of the half Shabbos, the texting on Shabbos, I think we get some insight into what's going on with the general idea of the cell phones and the, you know, and texting. Yeah, go ahead.
How is it different than any sort of addiction?
I mean, I would think what's so perplexing, I think, to the writer of the article, to the rabbis in the school, the parents, to the older generation, what's so perplexing is, like, that your question to them is just, like, what are you even asking? Isn't it obvious? Like, they can understand you're addicted to nicotine. You're addicted to crack. They understand, like, a physical addiction, you know? But, like, what are you sneaking out to send a text? Like, what the heck is going on here? Like, where's the taiva? Like, you're getting hana each time you press a little key, you know? Like, they don't understand where's the addiction coming from? What's the satisfaction going on? I think that's the problem. It's what's so perplexing to the older generations. They can't really wrap their heads around how you, like, what's the drive? What's motivating the whole phenomenon?
I think, yeah. I mean, I think it's, first of all, I think it's interesting to think about the other phenomena, like Facebook in general. I think,
yeah,
like,
right.
Staying, I mean, from personal experience, like, staying away from Facebook for, like, 20 minutes is, like, difficult. Because, like, I feel like with Facebook, it's, like, I get my identity, I get my image from Facebook. And I think, like, that's where I define myself, like, through Facebook, how other people see me.
Good.
So I think texting is the same sort of thing. I think it's, like, basically, I need, like, I can't be self-defined. Like, I need the people around me to define who I am.
Okay, good. So, good. So, I'm not the first person to have this far. It's true. Okay, good. So, I just want to, like, kind of basically take that idea exactly and just develop it a little bit, okay? And then we'll combine it with Gmar Megillah and we'll come up with something new, okay? But that's exactly it. So, I think that's the phenomenon. And I just want to make one point of why I think it's happening in this generation. I think texting really became big 5-7 years ago. I don't think it was so much that just like the prevalence of texting. I think it's really gone up in the past 5-7 years. I
mean, it used to be that it was kind of like a commodity. Like you only have like X amount of text messages.
People texted a little bit. I don't think they fully realized like just how valuable texting could be and how much it can be used. It didn't really explode until fairly recently. You know, really the past 5-7 years. Yeah, but I think it's just the phenomenon of what's going on. I think what makes it special here is that the phone, the cell phone is on your person, on your body. It's always with you, and it's a different quality when you're always connected to the Facebook, the Twitter. I love putting that in front of everything, you know. The Facebook, the Twitter, the texting. When you're always connected to it constantly, it has a different quality than when it does otherwise. If sometimes, you know, even when it's a desktop computer, sometimes you're going there, sometimes you're separated from it. If you come down to the base medrash, then you're not by the computer and you're not connected to it, you know. But now you come down to the base medrash, you got your phone on you. Your friend sends you a text, during shiur, you can open up the phone. Like it's constant. It's a constant always process. It's available to the person always, okay? Now, I think what happens is like this, is what's the phenomenon with the kids that they're suffering terribly, you know? I think the problem is like this, is that basically you have to split, I think, the world into two parts. I think there's the external world that a person has, where his relationships with other people and the information he takes in from the outside world, the things he learns from his teachers, the things he learns from, you know, from books, from the internet, from, you know, and the relationships, social related, being part of a society and following up on the news and all these things, the external world that a person partakes of and a person is related to. And those creates part of who the person is, their identity, their ego, their sense of self develops as a part of all these relationships. And that's normal, and that's man's a social creature, and that's part of how man exists. But I think what happens is like this, there's also another part of the world, and that's a person's inner world, where he develops, in a sense, as an individual who can exist separate from his relationships and connections to everybody else. In a certain sense of the self-identity, a self-confidence of what your personal values are, what your beliefs are, how you want to lead your life, those questions, developing your sense of your ethics, how you want to behave, and you know how your values, your inner world. And I think that process of developing a person's sense of self is a process that really kicks in teenage years when you're kind of pulling away from your parents, you're becoming an independent individual, and that you really go through that kind of self-development, which is critical, lays the foundations for your future life, or for your future, your sense of who you are as an individual. And a successful psychological development allows the individual to kind of operate in both worlds as an individual separate from the crowd, but also as a person who's well integrated and can relate to other people and be integrated into the society around them. And that's how, you know, it's always kind of been the case in a sense. And I think that still is the case, that a healthy development, a healthy natural development allows the individual to be able to exist on his own and to flourish as a separate individual. But what's happening in these extreme cases, and, you know, the question is just how, you know, in the extreme cases where I think the pshat is like this, is that the kids can't exist without the cell phone. They don't know what it means to exist. They don't know what to do with themselves. They're bored. They're in pain. It's just they haven't devoted time, because they haven't had to devote time to the development of their ability to exist independent of these connections and these relationships. So that now Shabbos comes and like it's the pain of having to now. There's a certain sense of an anxiety of being cut off from everybody else. And those bonds and those relationships to everybody else, it gives a person a certain sense of security, of having a place, knowing who they are. And when you sever those bonds, even for 24 hours, there's an anxiety that comes about from the person of what are they supposed to do? What they should be doing with themselves? They don't know what to do. There's no channels for them to you know, exercise their energies and to feel satisfied. They haven't developed those roots. So they feel an anxiety, and it's an intolerable anxiety. Now that's, I think, the addict. That's the really extreme case. And that's these kids who, they can do everything else, but they can't separate from their cell phone on Shabbos because they don't know how to, they haven't really developed the capacity to be able to enjoy life as an individual. Okay? That, I think, is the, you know, I think it's the extreme. The point to take out of it, I think, is not so much the idea of the extreme. I don't think that's the real point here. And the idea of the Shia is more of a positive Shia. We'll get to the positives later on. But the idea is like this, is that this change that's going on with the Facebook and the texting and all the social networking and the internet as a whole, it's changing the psychological development of people. People are not in the younger generation. They're not developing the same psychological structures of their mind as they would otherwise have if they weren't always constantly connected. It causes the psyche to develop in a different way. And it doesn't really have to be a bad thing. Because I think a person can really, could find a balance. I think a lot of people, most people, probably do find the right balance, you know, and it's possible to. But it's either way, it's different. The way you interact with the world is different than the way people interacted with the world even 10, 15 years ago, where you're doing, you know, 3-4 things at once. You're watching TV, you're sending a text message, you're talking to your friend, you're eating dinner. You're doing many things at once. Your life is not, especially once you get outside of the older institutions, like a school or the yeshiva, where there's fixed time slots of, you know, you have to go to class at a specific time, and, you know, but in the world of the internet and in the social or, you know, networking world, it doesn't have the same quality of like a linear, fixed, structured time frames where every interaction, you don't meet up with a particular friend for a particular hour and talk to them, but rather you're dealing with many people at once, you're dealing with many things at once, and when and how and who you're dealing with is much more fluid, and it's different. And I think that the structure of your mind and how the mind works is changing, and it's not necessarily going to fit into the old way that the world was structured, the way that the new psychological way that I think it's the cell phones tremendously are changing the way a person develops through their teenage years. And I don't think that's something you can really stop. I originally thought you got to have good. How you can stop this. But I don't think it's something that should be and could be stopped, because that's the way the world is. That's the way people are going to be. You know what I mean? Like, what are you going to be? The one guy from the older from 20 years ago living in the new world? Doesn't make any sense. You know what I mean? The world is changing, and businesses are changing, and the way people are expected to be involved in their business because of the Blackberries and all. It's changing, and how people arrange meetings is different. So, like, the people are changing, and the world is changing, and you know, we're going to take it up. But it's not just the external world is changing, but I think how your mind develops is also, it's a different mind a little bit. And that's why people from an older generation can't really understand like the desire to text, because they don't understand you're constantly connected. And to have that being, once you become constantly connected, the security that provides to you, to remove that, the anxiety is created, they can't relate to the anxiety. So they look at it as like a taiva. It's like some sort of like a drug, and that's not really the right category to put it in. Okay, that's really the first point. Okay?
There's no other similar phenomenon like that you don't see this by anything else, you know, for an older generation. You know, you can't say for drugs, because that's something where you have some sort of you know, physical pleasure out of it or whatever it is.
Right.
But
no, well look, you know what? Mankind has gone through many stages of where the psyche of man has changed, on a social level, but the social level means the individuals of the society. You know, there's certain, you know, people from every generation, they share certain underlying similarities. You know, and like that is different now than it was 100 years ago, and different than, you know, I mean, television was very a major thing, and you know, the printing press changed things. You know, people were really bored now. You got to read books. You're always reading books. You know, addicted to books. I don't know. But I'm just saying, I don't think the idea of like a revolution in mankind's psychological structures is a unique phenomenon. Okay, I think this particular type of change is unique to the fact that the cell phones are constantly available on a person's body. Always, that's something that hasn't really ever been the case. You know, for a person to always be able to be connected to everything, always, through the cell phone. And in a sense, the cell phone becomes your link to the world, and it becomes part of who you are, such that you don't understand how to exist separate from it. Okay, but I think that the constancy of the phenomenon of the connectedness is specific because of the fact that you can be on your person, and that I think changes things. But the idea of a psychological revolution, how mankind's psyche develops and changes over time, that's not a unique phenomenon. There are periods of times, usually it happens in short spurts. Like short spurts, you have major changes, and then, you know, you have periods of calm. But definitely there are other times. Okay. Now, next new source is the Gemara Megillah. It's Chaf Aleph Amud Aleph. So it's about seven lines up from the bottom.
Do you think that's a different phenomenon, like a guy who is obsessed with his job so much that like that he
constantly involved in
Shiva, he can't really get out of it. Like,
not really.
Still, like, even if he doesn't do anything, he's still really just like thinking about it.
Very similar idea. It's the same thing. People can take this their work and they can use it to fill their entire existence. Such that like when they retire, they go crazy.
Right.
Because like they don't know how to exist on their own, and the way they substitute, anytime they have any anxiety over how should I lead my life, what should I do, what's proper, what's not proper, they, instead of answering those questions and dealing with the difficulty in developing a self, the integrity of the self, it's a painful process. That's teenagers, a hard year, you know, hard life, part of life to go through. You have to really develop it, and there's difficulty, the conflict. You have to learn how to resolve those conflicts. So instead of resolving those conflicts, if you just run to your cell phone, run to your work, and you fill the anxiety and the conflict, and you fill it with external connections and superficial activities, you avoid having to deal with your internal world. And I don't think it's that much of a difference for a guy who's constantly working on his computer, for a guy who's always texting on Facebook, all this stuff all day long. There's no real difference. It's your whole existence is being consumed by these kinds of activities. Okay, but I don't think the idea is to change that to change that too much in a sense. You'll see hopefully what I think the solution might be, possible solution. Okay, seven lines up. Chaf Aleph Amud Aleph Megillah. Mars is like this. Tan Rabbanan Mimos Moshe Vad Rav Gamliel Lo Hayu LeMeidin Torah Elam Umad. So from the time of Moshe Rabbeinu until Rabban Gamliel, this is before Hazaken, this is before the Chorban of Bayashani, the Rambam says, is they when they the Rav would sit down and the Talmidim would stand up when they were learning Torah. Okay. Mishemes Rabban Gamliel, Yarad Chuli La'olam. Once Rabban Gamliel died, weakness, sickness went down into the world. V'hayulamedim Torah Miyushav. And then they started learning Torah sitting down. The Rambam describes as then the Rebbeim started being noheg that they would teach to students. It was a niyug that started from the Rebbeim themselves, that they should teach to students when the students are sitting down and not make the students stand up to learn. Okay?
What's the reason for that? It was just a...
Oh, the reason for standing up?
Yeah.
Okay, fine. So that's what I'm going to explain a little bit. V'hainu ditnan, and that's what the Mishnah says, is mishemes Rabban Gamliel hazakein batal kavanat Torah. Okay? Is that once Rabban Gamliel died and everybody starts sitting down to learn Torah, that's when the Kavod HaTorah really stopped. Okay, obviously it doesn't mean in its entirety, but it means a certain qualitative aspect of Kavod HaTorah was lacking from that point on. Okay, I'm going to read one more line further. The Ikar D'Oraisa of how it's supposed to be from Moshe Rabbeinu until Rabban Gamliel is learned out from a contradiction in Psukim. There's four different ways to resolve it, but I'm going to deal with just the first one here. Time is a little short. The contradiction in Psukim. Kosev Echad Omer by Moshe Rabbeinu on the mountain when he's learning the entire Torah from God. The first Rebbe Talmud relationship, right, is from Moshe Rabbeinu. Okay? He says, Ve'eshev Bahar, the Moshe Rabbeinu was sitting. He was sitting learning Torah on the mountain, on Har Sinai. The Kosev Echad Omer, Vanochi Amadati Bahar. And another passage says he was standing on the mountain. So when he was sitting there learning Torah, was he standing? Was he sitting? What position should the Talmud be in? Doraisa, Ikur Doraisa. How's the process of Torah? The process of learning Torah. How is the Torah understanding the process of learning Torah? Sitting or standing? So deal with the first shita. Amarav, Omed Velomed Yoshe Vishona. So Rashi, Omed Velomed Mipia Gvura. So when he was learning Mipia Gvura from the mouth of a Kadosh Baruch Hu, he was standing up. Yoshe Vishona, Shenis Lavada Mashalamad, when he was going over the matter on his own, trying to understand the matter in a deeper sense, he would sit down. Okay?
So comparison between the Shechina and a Rebbe? Is that what they're saying? You should be standing when...
Right.
Okay.
Correct. We'll try to see if we can develop that a little bit. So, okay, what's the pshat, according to Rav? What's the pshat in the two positions? Okay, so I think it says some pshat like this. And what does it mean, butla kavod Torah, right? So I think it's like this, is that basically, in Talmud Torah, at least the way Rav is seeing it, there's a basic chilik between two parts to the process of learning Torah. There's the first part of the process where you're receiving the information from the Masorah, from your Rebbe, of what the facts of Torah are, what's the methodology and how to learn. When you're learning the Masorah from your Rebbe, which goes back from his Rebbe, to really Moshe Rabbeinu to Kadosh Baruch Hu. And it's Mipi Agvura in the sense of it's through a Shliach, but, you know, your Rebbe is Domel Machashem Tzavakos. It's an idea of you're learning from somebody who's a part of a chain of transmission that originated from a Kadosh Baruch Hu at Har Sinai. And that's the first part. That's the information, that's the Masorah. And when you're learning that, the most important thing is to be focused on the information that is coming to you from the external world. You're receiving information. And a person in a position of standing, he's most alert, he's most ready, he's most focused, and he's able to focus on the information coming at him. He's not really relaxed, he's in his upright position, but he's focused, he has attention, he's concentrating on the words, on what the message coming to him, to remember it, to accurately perceive it, what's going on. And he has an intense focus on the words that his Rebbe is teaching him, because it's Mipi Agvura. Because the Torah is not simply, you know, secular knowledge, it's not man's knowledge, but this is the Masorah that comes from Har Sinai. And that recognition of what the Torah is something that demands him to really stand up and be mechabit and should treat it like Mipi Agvura. So when they were no longer... Okay, fine. The second step of the process is when, after a person receives the Masorah and Pi Agvura, then he has to use his own mind, his internal thoughts. And there's the inner world where you sit down, you're not doing anything else, and you're thinking about, you know, Ian, where demands a person just simply exists with himself and his mind and his thoughts, and he thinks over the problem, he tries to understand it, he tries to grapple with it. And that process is really, it's not an, you almost want to shut off the external world there. Like we see a person is deep in thought. You say he doesn't notice you talking. He doesn't really notice. He's deep in thought. He's engrossed in his thought. So in a sense, you pull your concentration, your attention from the external world, and you focus it on the internal world of your mind. And that demands, and that really, sitting is the best position. You're totally relaxed, and you're not focused on the information coming in the external world. You're thinking about the ideas that are going on in your mind. And that's why Moshe Rabbeinu would try to understand on his own, he would sit down. But when he was learning Pi Agvura, he would stand up, focused, okay, and his attention concentrated. Okay? Because Torah really has these two components, and they're both important. You have to learn the Masorah from your Rebbe, but on the other hand, you have to be able to think on your own in your own internal world of thought.
How is Omed a better form of concentration?
Well, personally, I think when you're standing, you're more alert. You're more focused. You know, when you're sitting, it's more relaxed. It's a more relaxed position. You know, it's more susceptible to a person, you know, pulling his energies from the external world and thinking. But just in terms of focus, you know, it might be difficult to stand, but when you're standing up, you're more focused, awake, you're alert, you know. I think that it's a position. The position of the body has an impact on the mind. It just does, you know, just neurologically even. It just does, you know. What position you're in helps affect your mood, affect your attitude, your concentration, your attention. And I think it means butla kavod Torah is because when Rabbi Gamliel died, they no longer had that sense that when they're learning from the Rebbe, that it was Mipi Agvura to the same degree. And they could no longer, there was a diminishment in the Masorah. In the Masorah, the whole process of learning was changed. Okay, and they didn't have the same way they related to the Divrei Torah. And the Kavod HaTorah was impacted because they didn't relate to it as Mipi Agvura. You know, it's obviously we're, you know, from their generation, you know, that we don't have that same kind of sense. When you're learning from Rebbe, it means to be Pia Gruel like they used to have. And that ended with Rebbe Gamliel. And that was a real change. It was a real change in the generation, and it was a yardachuli lolam. It was a diminishment. It was a weakness, right? And the Mesorah was decreased. There was a the reduction in the ability of the process of conveying the Mesorah, and the process of learning was reduced from that point on. It continues to exist, but it exists in a reduced fashion. Okay. That's the second point of this year. You know, I'll try to put them together. Okay. So the point of this year is like this. Is not to say that I want to basically make the point is like this, is that I think it's important to be aware of what's going on, of what the changes that are occurring in the world. And it's not a problem specifically to modern Orthodox Jews. It's not a problem, it's not a Jewish problem at all. There's a problem the world recognizes as a whole, what's going on with the new generation, what's going on with the phones, the tablets, and it's changing the world, it's changing the teenagers, and it's changing how they're interacting with the world, and things aren't fitting in properly. Things aren't working out, and it's not a problem specific to modern Orthodoxy or the Yeshiva or Torah. Okay? But on the other hand, you can't really rely on the world to figure out the problem, because the world doesn't really have a very good sense of how to educate, how to teach. The methods that the world has for teaching, educating, they're horrible. You know what I mean? They have the public education school system. You know what I mean? It's terrible. Nobody gets an education from them. They don't have very sophisticated methods of teaching. And the method of teaching of Torah is far superior, far more advanced. They don't even know the idea of a Talmud and a Rebbe, and the idea of Chavrusos, the idea of Ian, and the whole process of learning Torah is much more sophisticated, advanced way of learning and teaching that Jews and the not Jews because of the Mesorah of Torah have. And it's something that, you know, the world probably recognizes why Jews are, you know, there's a certain advancement in education and teaching that we have. And it comes from Sinai. But my point is, you can't really rely on the Umos Olam to figure out the problem, to figure out the solutions. And I think that dealing with this issue appropriately can prevent it being from being Yarda Chuli Le'olam, from it being a diminishment of the Mesorah across this transition point. Instead of it being a diminishment where guys aren't able really to learn, and there should be a reduction of Mesorah, you know, where people won't be able to learn. You know, right now we try to learn like the Briskers, we try to learn like the Rav, you know, or like Reb Chaim, we try. You know, maybe we're not going to learn exactly like Reb Chaim, but we try to learn like them. You know, we don't try to learn like the Tanaim and Marim anymore. We don't even try. But we try to learn like the Briskers, you know, we try. But there's a possibility that Mesorah of how to do that, it could be lost. It could be lost, and people will be just studying, you know, studying the words of the Rav, the words of the Reb Chaim. They won't be able to learn on their own. There's a possibility. There's no guarantee that which we have now is going to transfer to the next generation. And I think that this phenomenon of the change through the internet and the cell phones, it's a necessary change, I think, that's occurring in people's psyches and how you're organizing your life. And I think the reason is because you know, the old way of doing, I think that I just want to just contrast the old way of doing things. And I think that's part of the problem, is I think the old way of doing things is a much more structured, rigid approach, where you have like, you know, 10 classes in a day, and you go to a specific class for 45 minutes, and you have a specific assignment you have to do. And when you want to learn with a chavrusa, you schedule a specific chavrusa for an hour and a half at a specific time. And you want to go to a shir, there's a shir at 11 o'clock, and that's when it is. And if you, you know, and you, it's got to be in this particular place in this particular time. And I think that, you know, maybe was the appropriate way to structure knowledge and education, you know, 20 years ago, but now that's just not, if you do that, you'll never be able to incorporate all the information available to you. That's the information that's available to a person now is so much more than it was 20 years ago, 30 years ago, because of the internet. And the whole idea of the phone and the internet and the Facebook and you know, the texting, it's a superior method of communicating. You can interact with more people, you can maintain more relationships, you can access more knowledge because you're not dealing in confined, rigid structures. And the fact that your mind is more fluid and able to interact in a more fluid, less structured, less rigid way is an adaptation to take advantage of the full potential that's available because of these advances. And it's not going to reverse. It's not going back the other way. This is where the world is going. It's already almost there. And the question, I think, is how can Torah, how can the method of learning Torah, how can the process of learning the methodology and the Masorah, how can that transform from make that jump from the old way, the old, you know, rigid structured way, to the new way that people think, the new way that they take in knowledge. You know, they're still going to try to, you know, if you want to go to class in high school, they're not going to change. They're not going to make it no classes. You know what I mean? It's not going to be. They're still going to make you go to class specific times, specific places. You know, because the public education system in America and just in general, it's just very fixed, and the old ways are fixed, and people running the institutions are not 20 years old. They're running, they're 50 years old. They don't live in this kind of world. So the old institutions, I think, are made for different people. And I think right now you have a phenomenon where you have the institutions for transmitting the Masorah are made for people who are, in a sense, they're coming out different. And it's not really the way that you learn. It is not exactly, these aren't the way that the institutions are set up, are structured, is not really the way you take in the knowledge. And I think the
idea... And the two are at odds with each other?
I think it's just, yeah. I think in a sense it is. Okay, so what's the... I think here, I have two suggestions, but I think the real point is not my suggestions, because I don't think that I really have the exact idea of what to do, you know? I think the way it's going to be done is it's going to have to come from you. It's going to have to come from your generation, the person who really exists in that matter, in that kind of world. You have to use, in a sense, your creative abilities, your imagination, it's the creative abilities of a human being of how to change, how to adapt to a totally new environment. It demands new categories, new ways of thinking. So I'm just going to discuss the two ideas I had just with Rabbi Feder, and just to give you an idea of the kinds of things we're talking about. And then I just think really it's, you know, the two ideas were like this. The first one was the Blago Shir, which was an idea of instead of having a Shir at a specific time, where you have to come for a specific time, we're making it, breaking it up into a blog and putting it into separate posts, and where a person can really access it at any part of the day, while they're at work, during lunchtime, at late at night, and they could discuss it with, the 10 different people are all, you know, doing the same thing, learning the same sugya. They can discuss it with each other. You can have, you know, the comment section, which functions as a virtual-based medrash, and people can discuss different ideas. And it's not, you're not bound to participate at a specific time and place, but you can do it 5 minutes here, you know, and then you think about the problem, and then you do something else. You text your friend, you read something on the internet, you watch some movie, whatever, and your mind's working on the problem. And that's how your mind works on problems anyway. You don't have to always be thinking about something for an hour in a focused manner, okay? You could. Some people think that way. But you could think in spurts where you think about an idea, you kind of put it on the back burner for a little bit, and then your mind comes back to it, and you get as far.
There's very large movements to make that into the new class structure. I know there's
like an online class, this kind of idea.
Not necessarily online classes where you would have, you know, students participate in a classroom setting, but not necessarily like a scheduled setting.
Exactly. Not the organized structure.
You log into your computer whenever you want, exactly. And you get your stuff done whenever you want.
Correct. I mean, yeah, it's not really a totally new idea. It's just nobody's really done this with Torah yet. And I just think that if you don't do this and you try to say, tell guys that if you want to be a Talmud Chacham, the only way you can be a Talmud Chacham is if you put away, turn off your phones, come to base medrash, make chavrusas, and you know, you got to separate yourself from your phone and during shir, during this, at a specific time, I'm afraid that you're going to lose, you know, the next generation. And there's going to be yard d'chuli l'olam, that there's going to be a diminishment in the Masorah and the way it's transmitted. If you try to force the younger generation to try to
like a bitterness associate a bitterness with learning.
Yeah, that's for sure a bitterness. But I'm saying even more than a bitterness, it just doesn't mesh. It's just the way you receive. That's not the way you receive information. That's not the way you integrate information the same way. So to force it to be the old way people used to integrate, you're not the same type of person as they were 20 years ago. It's a different mind. It's a different way the mind integrates and understands information. Yeah, go ahead.
No, I mean, I think, I mean, you were saying earlier though, that you need to develop this sort of self-identity that's separate from people, that's separate from...
Right.
I mean, I don't think it's healthy to always be, you know, constantly. I think Torah can also help you develop the self-identity.
Right, for sure.
If you're doing it in the right sort of way.
Absolutely. Know? Yeah, correct. Yeah, correct. And that's also just, yeah, right, in this world that you create for yourself, right, this world that you create through the internet, which is the world you're going to exist in. That's the world of the, you know what I mean, you're really going to, it's been part of your reality. Is I think that to bring Torah into that reality, to make, like, you know, you're addicted to the internet, fine, but at least check over a Torah blog. You know what I mean? You're looking for things to do, kill your time, to click on a blog, a Torah, you know. So just integrating Torah into that world, into that space, you know, that space you have, I think that can have, yeah, impact on your personal psychological.
What I'm saying is that I think Torah, I mean, Torah in that space, it can coexist, but I think essentially Torah can't just be in that space. I mean, Torah also needs to be in this personal type of space, because it's not going to be healthy. It's not, if you don't have self-identity, you're not really, like, you're going to definitely get certain ideas well, but you need to have this, like, personal type of, like...
Yeah, no, these addicts over here, if you can't, you know, if you really, I mean, you got to see, if you cannot tolerate existing with your phone off for a day, you know, you really can't tolerate it, it could be an extreme point. And that's already a psychological, really the psychological development of the person. I'm trying to give the benefit of the doubt to the sense to the younger generation. I think they will figure out a way to harmonize that part. That part's not going away, the idea of a certain sense of self and separateness. And, like, that's, I don't think, going to go away. I don't think we're going to have that radical a change in human psyche, that's going to be totally gone. But I think the relationship between the two is going to change. And I don't know if you can pin it down, and I don't think you can predict it. And I'm not really, I think you guys probably know better how exactly you're going to integrate those two worlds. And how you're going to, you know, it might not necessarily be the same way that, like, sometimes you're by yourself, sometimes it might not be, you know, in, like really in time and place. Like, the way we used to do it is there's time and place where you're alone, you're thinking by yourself, there's times where you're interacting with other people. But it was, like, everything was very, like, discrete in terms of time and space, like, really separate places of your life. And I don't, it doesn't seem to me that that's the way it's happening, but it definitely the psychological development of the individual is going to have to be, it's going to have to be developed so the individual can flourish, you know, and what it means for a person to, you know, exist as an independent person and socially. But certainly integrating Torah into that world of the computer and, the, you know, Facebook and texting, things like that, that I think is a big step in just... helping, you know, at least be involved in something that has meaning. You know, if you're going to be addicted, at least, you know. And I think it helps the person in a sense. At least it helps the person in a sense, you know, just deal with, you know, those... Truth is, at the very least, I think just being involved in Chachma helps the person, you know.
You're going to have those energies...
Yeah,
you know, focused on a certain point. Why not focus it on?
Correct. You're right. You have to be playing with your phone. So at least play with the phone as a Torah blog, you know. And I hope there'll be other ideas of Torah this year. The idea of this year going to the internet and being in this kind of style, I think, is something idea that, you know, I don't think it's going to be. I think it just makes sense that that's going to. It's a method of.
I mean, but there's definitely an allure to certain things. Like, people love watching ridiculous videos online, right? They like seeing stupidity.
Yeah.
But that. You're not.
Well, that's always been the case,
right? But you're going to get, you know, funny pictures, whatever it is. But you're not going to, you know, get those people away from, because that's something they find enjoyment in. You're not going to find people who find enjoyment in watching videos. You're not necessarily going to see them all of a sudden. Oh, you know what? I'm wasting time anyway. I'm going to go over.
No, this is not a musher. It's not an idea of musher right now. I'm not trying to convince people that Chachma is a good thing, Torah is a good thing. What I'm trying to do is saying there are people who understand Torah is a good thing, that learning is a good thing. They want to be a Talmid Chacham. But your model of what it means to be a Talmid Chacham is you're looking at somebody from an older generation who doesn't live life the way you're going to be leading life, who doesn't organize his life in the same manner. And for you, and I think there's a certain problem of, like, I want to be a Talmid Chacham, but I can't do that. That's just not the way I think. That's not the way I live my life. So I'm just trying to show that you need to use your creativity to almost imagine how a Talmid Chacham is going to operate and going to exist in this new world that's going to develop. Is he going to... Here's the other idea, the Chavrus idea. This is from Rabbi Feder. But it's an interesting idea. I'm not sure how... It's an interesting idea. Okay, but you guys tell me. These ideas could be crazy. I don't know. Maybe you guys will tell me. But the idea of a Chavrus, instead of arranging a Chavrus for an hour and a half in the Beis Medrash or over the phone or something like that, a texting Chavrus, where you don't have a specific time where you learn with the person, but you text the person back and forth over the course of a day. You have different ideas. You're involved in a particular sugya. Maybe you take up, however you find the sugya, you find the sugya. Maybe you take the blog or share for the point. But you have a chavrusa with somebody, and you have a kavua chavrusa. And it's Kaveh Tum Torah. It's a fixed part of your life, but it's not. You don't have to arrange to learn with the person at a specific time. How's it Kaveh Tum Torah? Because I don't think Kaveh Tum Torah Pshat is you have to take
it
out.
How is it practically going to be Kavla?
Because you're going to do it over the course of the day. You have a cell phone. He gets a text. You think about it. An hour later, you'll send him back another text.
You have to actively think to...
Yeah, you can't avoid the problem of thinking. That's a problem.
In order to get it started. How are you going to get started?
How you arrange a chavrusa?
So you have to arrange a chavrusa.
Yeah. No, you arrange a chavrusa, but you don't arrange the chavrusa that we're going to sit down at 8 o'clock every night. You arrange a chavrusa that we're texting chavrusas, and that we'll send each other instead of our text being, "Hey, did you see the Giant game?" Or "I can't believe maybe Peyton Manning is going to the Seahawks." Instead of texting, instead of having that text, your text could be about an idea of Purim. What do you think? What's the idea of Suda's Purim? That could be your text. And he goes, "Well, what about this?" And he says, "How about this Rambam, on this particular point?" And I don't know how good you guys are at texting. I said, "This sounds to me crazy. You'd be texting all day long, But our Feder seems to think that you guys are expert texters, so that maybe this is, you can live with, have a conversation this way. I don't know if it's practical to have a chavrusa without having to meet in person and have a fixed time.
I can't write out a svara in a text.
So it might not be too practical. Yeah. I don't know. I'm not trying to give exact particular reasons. Right. I just want to show the idea that that you have to kind of be creative and see. I think you guys will be. The point this year is not to really give specific ideas. It's not to give most. It's to, in a sense, just raise a certain level of self-awareness in you. That the way you think is changing, and it might not be appropriate to the way the older methods of teaching and learning are. That might not be the way you learn and the way you think. And it demands a certain creativity that comes from you who understands it, and it's not necessarily going to be able to come from the older generation. And if this transition isn't achieved, it could increase the look. The internet's an amazing phenomenon. You can learn with maybe more people through that. I don't have text and chavrusa. Just let's say it works. You can learn with many more chavrusas. For right now, a guy who has a job, you can only with one person at a night. You know what I mean? That's an hour. Look, that's what Kaveh Tum Torah means in the modern day America. You learn for one chavrusa a night. That's the best person can do, and that's something. And that's what you do if you have a long job. But, maybe because of the internet and texting, you could have four chavrusas over the course of a day, during work and lunch and that night and all these things. It could be an advancement in the ability of Torah and people to maintain learning. It could be a much greater thing. You can give a shiur and 100 people can read it because it's not confined to being at 11 o'clock in the middle of the day at a specific time and place. And I think the Masorah can increase. It could be a beneficial thing. Certainly doesn't have to decrease. But I think if we don't meet these challenges and we don't recognize what's going on, and I think you guys don't really recognize what's going on, I don't think the creative ideas of how it's going to transform is really going to be supplied from the older generation. I don't think they fully grasp what it means, the texting thing. And I think they're baffled by the whole phenomenon of how you think. And I think that just the main point this year essentially is to make you guys self-aware, and hopefully, if the source of wellsprings of creativity will come from you guys. Good?
Yeah. All right.